and welcome to another episode of Don't Shit on the Buffs. I'm your host, Adam Olkais, tuning in all the way from Los Angeles, California, for episode number 73 with the amazing Josh Terry. Now, thank you so much, Josh, for joining me this week. Josh manages, most notably, the band Mayday Parade and is one of the creators, founders, and people who runs Sad Summer Festival. If you haven't had a chance to check out the festival, check it out. We got all the links in the caption as usual. Anyway, this week's episode was pretty much, a masterclass in talking about what it takes to be a mentor and a mentee in the music industry. Josh has been in the industry for a while, and he's been a part of a lot of different people's journeys, and you will never meet somebody who has a bad thing to say about him. And I think that tells us a lot about somebody's character, because he just operates from a place of good values, good intentions, and helps raise up all the people that work with him and he surrounds himself with respect. I aspire to be more like you. I appreciate you taking time to teach me what you taught me today. And I think being a mentor it's a very difficult thing to do. It took me a long time to learn how to do it. I'm constantly learning how to get better. And then it's also hard to learn. And then on the flip side, it's also, you know, difficult to be a mentee or be the one learning, receiving it. And there's so much to learn all the time. I love coming into everything as much as possible with an open mind just to learn. And Josh kind of reiterates all that and how it pertains to the music industry. So I hope this episode can be helpful for people trying to get into the industry, trying to learn a little bit more about how they can be more valuable to the people they work with in the industry. And ultimately, the goal being having a long, successful, sustainable, and valuable career in the music industry. So thank you so much, Josh, for joining me this week. With that being said, of course, thank you to our patrons for contributing a weekly amount to keep this podcast going. Shout out to our new patrons, Dawn and Zach. Thank you so much for signing up. That is one person with two names as a patron. Thank you, guys. And I'm going to ask for a little something extra today. If you're watching this on Spotify, you can now rate the podcast. Feel free to do that. In addition, if you're watching on Spotify, the video version should be available every week. So you can watch video on there. Of course, we're on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can watch a podcast, we are there. Thank you so much for all the support, leaving your reviews on the podcast. Everything you do, especially listening, just helps so much. Last week's episode was great response. Thank you guys so much. Just thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, I will see you next week on Don't Shit on the Bus. Hey, Josh, how's it going, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to catch up with people on here, and I'm like simultaneously learning from them and catching up with them because we keep in touch and we work together here and there, but we don't sit down and have hour-long conversations.
We don't usually, and I probably don't do that with enough people post-pandemic and stuff. I think we all get kind of in our own bubble in that way. I miss the in-person stuff, but this is a good kind of workaround in that way.
No, agreed. And I find that like when we come to a podcast with a common goal or like an understanding, it's almost like a guided conversation. It's kind of just a nice way to talk to somebody. I don't know what it is. I'll keep figuring it out as I do it, but it's just nice.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. Well, I mean, we've known each other for a long time. I know you mostly as a manager. That's kind of how we met. You've been with Mayday Parade for like 8 years?
11.
That's crazy.
Yeah, this tour they just did, the self-titled tour, was a record I signed them on. So that would have been 10 years if we could have played it last year, but because it's this year, it's the 11th anniversary. So 11 years.
Wow. That dates you, and not in a bad way, but it dates me as well because I worked with them before you were their manager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's crazy to think about.
Oh my God. We're getting old, son. We're getting old.
We're doing it. Yeah. When you said, when we first started talking, you're like, I've been doing this for 20 years. And I was counting in my head. I was like, how long have I been doing it? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's nice. What's it feel like saying, yeah, I've been doing this for 20 years?
Old. You feel very, very old. I think especially when you deal with like young people all the time and they're like, we have interns that come in sometime. And like, I think 2 years ago, I had my first intern. Is like, when were you born? They're like 2000. I was like, get out of my office right now. Cause that's when I went to college. I was like, I feel like the oldest guy in the entire world.
It is weird, man. Dealing like the concept of time leaves me at a loss of words on a more regular basis than I care to, you know, admit. It's just very, very eerie to me.
Yeah. I think when you start on something, when you're young though, like the time kind of just goes and you forget about it. And then you go like, oh crap, it's been 18, 20 years.
Yeah. When did you start? What was your entry point to this industry? How'd you get into it?
I was 18. I was going to be a journalist and I won all these awards in high school. I was going to be an editorialist.
For writing?
Yeah, for writing.
That's awesome.
I was going to be a print editorialist. And then I got to college and realized, oh, I don't like reading the newspaper. This is a terrible idea. And I went to a week's worth of class. Like, oh man, I screwed up. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. And just a random friend recommended I join some stuff on campus just to see if I like stuff and to help meet people. I walked into the student activities office and they asked me what I was interested in. And I was downloading a bunch of stuff on Napster and going to shows. And they're like, well, we have a concert board. And I was like, who do you have? And they gave me this list of concerts and it was just trash. And I literally told the guy that. And he was like, well, if you think you can do it better, why don't you join the concert board? I was like, touche. And so I joined the concert board and the girl who's in charge of it quit after the first show because three people showed up to it. And those three people all worked for the concert committee. They gave it over to me. And so
those are awkward shows to be at.
I remember it was Jimmy's Chicken Shack. They booked a 750 cap theater. Jimmy's Chicken Shack hadn't been popular for 6 years and nobody showed up.
That's an artist.
It was like a alternative grunge band.
Oh my God.
It was terrible. And yeah, nobody came. So she quit and he quit and her friend quit and they were like, you're in charge. And so I did that for 3 years. And then it was interesting because I got in that way. And then I realized people must get jobs to do this. And so I would go in CD liners, and see who worked on these things. And I randomly found people that had the same area code I grew up in or the same area code I was in college with. And I'd call those people and be like, I don't know what you do. Can I come and sweep the floors and send out your mail and stuff? And they're like, we don't have any money. And I was like, I didn't ask you for any money. And through that, I had 14 internships in college.
That's a lot of internships.
Yeah. I think I got a dual degree. I got my degree from my college somehow. I don't know how I graduated because I barely went to class. And then I kind of got this side degree from all these young hustlers in the South, yeah. Some that were managing upstart bands and were about to have big years. Some that were on the tail end of their career and just managing regional bands and stuff like that. And then some that were just straight up drug dealers and hustlers. And so and I don't know who I learned the most from in that. I think I each of those people taught me different things about the music industry and how you carry yourself both in a positive and negative way. And it was just a very fascinating line of work.
Well, I mean, right when you got into it, your entry point to it was probably witnessing people who weren't prepared for the industry. I mean, they quit after one failure. What was your first show at college? Do you remember the first one you did? And
first one I booked?
Yeah, yeah.
First show that I booked was Better Than Ezra.
Oh, nice. Throwback. Was that Lucas Keller?
Yeah, yeah. We booked Better Than Ezra. And I thought that was going to do terrible, but the board wanted to book it. And so we booked it and it did well. And it was weird. Right after that, I got two MTV Campus Invasions. So we had The Used came. We had this hip hop group Clips came. We had Dave Chappelle came after that. So we had a run of stuff that just started happening because I think because of my internships and stuff, I knew how to talk to these agents and I wasn't using middle agents and stuff. I think the thing that I did in college that caused me to quit the campus board is we bid on a Dave Matthews acoustic tour with Tim Reynolds. And he eventually put a CD out with this. And we had the offer, Dave Matthews' agent wanted to do South Carolina. We had the offer and the person in administration would not sign the paperwork because it was a holiday. And so we lost the show to Appalachian State, which they ended up having MTV filmed at and stuff. And I literally this was a high up dude. His name was Jerry Brewer. I hate this guy. He was a high up dude. And he had been at the university for 30 years. And I was 19 years old. And that Monday after that holiday, I stormed into his office and was why did we lose this show? And he was son, you don't, I was don't ever call me son. And we had a whole thing. And literally I had a sit down with the university and I reamed into this guy and the guy he got put on a suspension for 2 weeks because he had not done the proper channels and stuff. And I was I feel good about this. I screwed this guy over a little bit. It was fine. So
yeah, the punishment happened for the thing that was done wrong. Oh, that makes sense.
And I said, it was one of those things that kind of built our staff at that point too, because I had all these kids. I went from having nobody on our staff to 70 people within the first 30 minutes, of us doing this thing. All these kids wanted to join music board because of the shows we started booking. Because
it was cool. Sounds like it was really
fun
cool
again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, and so like, I had all these kids excited about these things that MTV was going to come and film. And like, for the university to drop the ball, it was the first time I had challenged somebody in authority and came out like clean on the end of it. And like, that was like a, like, for me, that was a good thing of like, okay, like you can make a positive impact when somebody does something wrong, and you can, you don't have to just be scared of somebody's authority or time. And it's something I love when like younger kids challenge me on ideas, or like, because it's like, they should, because like, they're the ones that's like working and putting themselves in this situation. You always have to kind of be fresh. And I never want to be that guy that was so out of touch that he was too busy to sign off on the paperwork before he left for his like, probably all expenses paid trip by the university that my college tuition paid for.
So it sounds like you need to call Jerry and thank him.
I don't think Jerry would take my call. I think Jerry remembers who I am. So yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's, I like the idea of like this event that happened that is not traumatic, but left an impression on you. Usually it's negative, comes out with a, you know, net positive in a way. And it like, you know, kind of changed the whole way you live. And like you said, you like working with people with a beginner's mind because, you know, they're new to all these things, or they're finding other ways to make it work, and they're fresh. And, you know, that's great to hear.
When we all started somewhere. So like when you meet somebody that's hungry, it kind of takes you out of that place of like jaded, I've done this forever, and it allows you to kind of feed off their energy. And I think when you do this day after day, it can wear you down. So you sometimes need that energy. And so almost like when a kid's working with us, like it's the same thing of like, I'm learning from them just as much as they're learning from me, just in different avenues. And I think that's important to always keep front of mind, because that kid one day is going to be doing something bigger than what you're doing. And your goal is to kind of create a culture of people around you that understand and learn the business in the right way, so that you all can have a long career working together. And you can eliminate those people that were not helpful or were problematic, because they can't last when the culture gets better.
Oh my God. So many good things right there. First of all, yes, agreed. It's so important to learn from people that you're teaching too. And the thing that actually, I heard you do another podcast because you were on my old friend Andrew's podcast when I lived with him.
Yeah.
He used to do them in our living room and I lived upstairs, so I could hear them live. And there was very few times I listened to them recorded because it was just kind of fun. I would have to listen to them twice almost then. But one of the things that stuck out to me is you were talking about your interns and the people that worked with you. And you kind of put it into perspective by saying, you know, I like being part of somebody else's journey. And we've got Connor on the call here. He doesn't talk, but hi, Connor. That was a very big inspiration for me as I moved forward working with interns, because it's a hard thing to learn how to do. And you're really good at it. Like, I know you've generated several successful people from your company, whether it be management or another front that you're working on. But I was wondering, when you're going out, because we've got a lot of people on here, this is going to be a long-winded thing. I just wanted to say, too, before I go on, I love what you're talking about, are not getting jaded. We don't want people to go on the road and get bummed out, become roadies. We want people to be fresh, positive, always learning. And when you're looking for people that work with you on any of the things that you do, like, maybe first of all, how do you find them? And then how do you know they're a good fit? Like, what's that process like for you?
You know, it's a weird thing. I think sometimes they find me. I think being in Nashville, you know, has been a real positive. Like, I've always lived in non-music business, like, areas for the type of work I do. Like, when I started out, I was in South Carolina. There was hardly any music business there. Then I moved to Chicago. The company I worked for was the main hub at that point. There was not really a music business around that. And then coming to Nashville, this music business that was solely focused on country and Christian music. And so the guy that's managing Hot AC bands and pop punk bands, I wasn't competition for anybody. So I got all these left of center kids that were like in college and being told, you got to go work at CAA or William Morris or Warner Music or Red Light, all the resume boosters.
Yeah.
And they would come out of those and be like, yeah, we just made copies and got coffee. And it's kind of a boring internship. And I was like, I don't want you in here unless you're going to do work. So like, if you actually want to be hands-on and meet the artists, like, you need to be passionate about it. And I think, for the most part, I think when I did the math, I think I'm at like 79% of the kids that have interned for me over the course of 20 years went on to get a job in music, which is pretty good. But a lot of them have gone on to do really good stuff. Like, they've gone on and worked at major management companies or become major agents or publicists or worked at labels or toured. A lot of them are tour managers now, which I think is pretty cool. They all had something when I met them, because I do a thing when I interview a kid for an interview, like, you know, everybody has a resume and they've been polished and coached. I just throw the resume in the trash right in front of them and say, I didn't read this. And I say, who are you? Why are you here? What do you want to do?
Yeah.
And most kids buckle because like they've been coached into how to do a formal interview. And if I went through the formal interview, they'd fool me because like at that point they knew all the things to say to convince somebody like me, who's not paying attention to hire them. But if you put a kid on the spot and they have to really gut check themselves, you find out who they are. And when I can find out what to make somebody tick, I want to work with them harder, and I want to do stuff for them. And I want to like introduce them to stuff. So like almost every kid that's come out has two stories from me. One, like I freaked them out in the interview process. And on the last day of the internship, I fired them. So I always like do some kind of jokey way where I like fire a kid to be like, listen, like interning for me didn't make you homeless at the end of this thing. You're going to be able to get a job. So, but I've met really cool kids from that. And I think understanding what they want to do and taking the resources I have, whether it's the relationships I have or the reference, I don't reference anybody that's not good or somebody that like slacked off. But like, if I know some kid wants to do it, like I'm going to like Elena, who was an intern for us about 6 years ago. She's a day to day at Fly South in Orlando now. And, is great. Like we just had Magnolia Park on May Day's tour, and Elena's a co-manager on that. It's cool.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, but like she always wanted to work in that genre. And so like on the last day of her internship, she's like, I'm going to apply for this job at Fly South, but they don't know me. And I just called Mark Mercado and was like, listen, if you don't hire this kid, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Like just meet with her, but you'll be the idiot at the end of the day. And he met with her and loved her. And she's been there ever since. And she's excelling. And like that stuff makes me really happy because those are the kids that like, you know, they remind me of myself in some ways. And they remind me how much better they are than I was at that age. Mm-hmm. And you want them to win and you want to put them in the right opportunities. And for them to come work for me for free to learn the music business, that's kind of my give back for the time they have, is to like make sure to like use any whatever small amount of influence I have to help them afterwards if they help me in my bands during their time with us.
No, that's great. Man, it is cool. Like I knew Elena because of Fly South. I'd worked with her there, but I did not know that she came from, I did not know I was the recipient of your training already without knowing it. That's
she's
cool.
She's far better than anything I could have taught her, but I'm glad she's part of our story in that way. So,
you planted the seed. Yeah. You know, you help out a little bit. No, that's awesome. Well, I like hearing about what really makes somebody, you know, stick out to you, because through connecting with the people that are on our Discord or in our Patreon, I understand what the people who really want to make something happen are like. And it's a hard thing to articulate. Like, hey, you need to do these things. You have to really want it. It's like, well, what does that mean? Like, what does that look like in practice? And to hear you say like, well, you gotta, it just sounds like you gotta really be yourself. And then, you know, I don't know.
Well, I don't know how to teach anybody to make money. Like, that's the thing. Like people always, like I go to these conferences and talk to these like musicians that are looking for a shortcut, or these like kids that are like going to a music business college looking for a shortcut. And they're all like wanting to know, like, how do you become a successful manager? How do you work with big bands? How do you make a lot of money? And the only way I know how to do it is say, be yourself. Because if you yourself, someone's going to bet on you to manage them, if that's what you're going to do. And if you're full of crap, you're not going to manage them for a long time. But if you're like honest and genuine and like beat down doors and hustle and work hard and like do all the uncool stuff instead of just focusing on the cool stuff, you're going to probably have clients for a long time, because they're not going to want to drop you, or they're not going to get poached, or they're not going to think the grass is greener because they've got this person in their corner. It's going to work for them. And I think like, to me, it's like an it quality that somebody has. Like I can see somebody and be like, that person looks trustworthy, or that person looks like they're not going to lie to me, or that person's going to work harder and get more upset if they screw something up than if it's for me. And I'm like, oh, you screwed this up. It's not going to bother me as much as it is that kid. You find those kids, they're a diamond in the rough. And if you can ingrain them in your system, your business gets better, everything works together. But also like you really see what ticks and they add value. And I think as a small company and as a manager that's done this for a while, like I'm always just looking for how do I add value to people and how do people add value to me? And like, it's kind of a give and take.
That makes sense. And I'm trying to go back to something you said at the beginning of there, and I was writing down notes and I forgot what you said, but there was a term you used, and I'm going to make a quick question here to see if we can figure it out. Right before you said drop, poached, or work for somebody else, you mentioned like a term that I think was pretty normal to you, but I didn't know it. And I know it's a really vague description. Connor, did you hear anything? Just really, it's all good. I was like, it went through me, and then I was writing the next thing down. I was like, damn it, I can't remember it. But if it comes back to me later in the podcast,
we'll go with it. Yeah.
I'm trying. Now I'm going to be able to listen back to it later and be like, oh, damn, that's the word
that
I missed.
That should have been it. We'll just call me back and we'll edit it in or something. That'd be great.
Connor's like, I'm all in. No, that's cool. I mean, it's just nice. I don't know. I always say it's nice, but it is just nice hearing about how it all works. And then, okay, so you find these people that are passionate. You find these people that are, you know, trying to work in the industry and be themselves in a very authentic way. What do you think is the role of the mentor? No. Yeah, what makes a good mentor? So somebody like you or me, what do you try to focus on in teaching these people, you know, how to succeed in this industry? I know you said you can't teach them how to make money and take shortcuts, but what are you teaching them that you think is so valuable?
I think at this stage of my career, all I really have to offer people is perspective. Okay. You know, I can think about being, I can remember being in their shoes at 19 years old and mm-hmm. the angst and the wanting to accomplish and like the ego aspect of it. And like, I think my job sometimes is to kind of be like, slow down. Like, your career is not going to be over by the time you're 22. If you make one bad mistake, it's not going to affect everything. And like, recall stories of when like I thought I had screwed something up and how one door closing might have led to another door that was better, and like kind of the perseverance of the whole thing. And I can also, like, when a younger manager or an intern or an employee like asked me a question of like, what was the thought process behind this? It may mm-hmm. be something that's so quick for me because I've done it year after year after year, but for them, they might not have thought that way. And it takes me back to like some of those first jobs that I was in, and like just being in these rooms full of people that had like all kind of different personalities. And like, one of the guys just told me, he's like, shut up and listen. I was like, how can I be of help? Just like sit in the corner and shut up and listen.
Yeah.
And at the time I was like, this guy's a jerk, but he was entirely right. Because like in that moment I heard like the tone, and I heard how people had conversations, and I saw how like the wheeling and dealing was done. And it's stuff to this day I still can kind of take from that and say like, wow, like, okay, like if somebody's coming at me this way, they're trying to over leverage the situation. It helps in negotiation to kind of understand like where people are coming from, and also listening to what people want. Like, I think when you manage a client, you know, a lot of times managers screw up because they make it too much about themselves and their own ego and what they're getting from this and the money and the power mm-hmm. and all the other garbage that causes people to burn out and get lost. A client will tell you everything they want if you will shut up and listen to them. Because like, and it's your job to facilitate what they want. Even if what they want is not what you think is the right thing. Sometimes I've been wrong. Sometimes I've been right. Sometimes a client's been wrong. Sometimes a client's been right. But every single client that I've worked for has taught me something about myself, has taught me something about the job, and has taught me something about like just interpersonal relationships that are important to the next one. And I think as a mentor, your job is to take whatever potential the person in front of you has and help them mold it into something that, you know, like I create tradesmen in that way. Like if I can teach a kid to be a manager or event producer or whatever, they can make money as long as they want to. They may not make the most money every year, but they can always make a living using this trade. But if they don't have that passion and interest to do it, I can't help them get 1 year out of college.
Yeah.
Because it's so much easier to do something different than this. But man, it's a good job if you really focus on
it. Oh yeah. It's fun.
It is.
I remembered the thing that I missed. All right. When you were talking about, so the conversation we had before this part, you were talking about what people do that works and what doesn't work. And you mentioned something about people doing uncool things. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? I don't know what that means. What does it mean to do the uncool things? Can you explain that to me?
To rebook the flight at 11:59 at night, to make sure someone's seat assignment is correct, to make sure their meal preference is right, to make sure that their rewards club program in the rental car is set up, to do the small stuff that makes somebody's life a little bit easier that they will never know you did, because doing that eliminates complaints. Like, part of my job, and we have like a whole book full of this stuff now, just like, here are all the things that musicians will complain about. They're not original. They're all the same. And so like, it's like, if you can prep somebody to like have their brain start thinking about this now, it's the same way that when I was in college, I could tell you where every club in the country was by the zip code.
Yeah.
Because I just got used to like mailing stuff out and knowing where
stuff
went.
That's insane.
And it helped when I would talk to these buyers to be like, oh, that's this club here. It's a 350 cap club in Boone, North Carolina. Or that's the club that's in Palm Springs that holds 600 people. I could know that because I can memorize where stuff was mailed to. The same thing, like if you know that a musician is finicky about his seats and he has like a 14-hour flight, and somehow nobody went back to double check if he's not in his window seat that he wants, he ends up in a middle seat. The entire tour can be trash.
Yeah.
Because at that point, that musician did not think that you thought about it. And like our job as managers is to constantly be thinking about what more we can be doing for our clients. Not necessarily things that we make a percentage off of, but how do we make their lives better so that like as things evolve, they know, well, this is always taken care of. And that creates trust. And if it's the same thing with a client, same thing with as an employee, and same thing with an employer. If you're a young kid working for somebody and you do the bare minimum, that employer is never going to trust you. And guess what? If that employer doesn't trust you, you're not going to get put on better gigs. You're not going to have a better responsibility. You're not going to make more money. You're not going to get the opportunities you
want. Yeah.
But if you work hard, you find those opportunities and find a way for yourself to earn more, be in better positions, and work with things that are closer aligned with what you want to do. I think that's cool.
You just like when you say stuff and then I can find ways that I parallel it to my own life, you kind of put perspective or you make things make sense that I could never articulate before. And the really one that just clicked was when you're talking about all the things that musicians care about and focus about. And I was like, oh, I know all these things, but I'm not a manager. And I was like, oh, because I've been on tour with the bands and seen them get the middle seat on the flight and just be bummed and not understand it fully, but I get it now. And it really, you know, I think that's why the etiquette section of this podcast is forever growing, because to work and understand an artist is so hard because you're never going to live their life the way they are. And to understand all the things that matter to them, like flights or who's driving them or their food or all the little things that are their quality of life, is like, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. But think about it. Like, we all work with artists because artists inspired us to do this. Yeah. So why should, like, even if some of the things they do probably drive us crazy, why wouldn't we want to do something that improves their quality of life, that improves stuff for their family, for their, like when they're touring 200 days out of the year, if you haven't done that, you don't know how miserable that is. And had I not done that, I would not know all the things that bands complain about their managers not doing. And as I meet other managers now, and as I work, you know, everything from the festival to being a manager and working with them, you notice certain things that other managers like don't consider. And like, and you see why they lose clients so regularly, and you see why they have really aggressive relationships. And I just don't want that. I want everybody that works for me to want to work with me and be happy with the service I'm providing, or I want them to go somewhere else and find what they want to do. I don't involve myself in any aspect of my life in unhealthy, toxic relationships.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly not doing the way that I make money. So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, and other than, you know, when you're looking for people to work with you, or whether it be your, as a manager or as festival, like anybody you're working with, the thing you said already was that, you know, you don't want somebody who's doing the bare minimum, because then whether they realize it or not, their lack of opportunities is not going to be as vast as somebody else because, well, it's self-inflicted. But if you're looking for somebody to work with, other than maybe somebody only doing the bare minimum, are there any other red flags or big things that stand out to you that, I mean, there's the obvious stuff, right? Like, I don't want to work with an asshole. I don't want to work with somebody like that. But what are some things that people might not think about that are kind of big red flags to you? And they might be rules or values or I don't know. Do you have anything?
I think attitude's a big one. Like, I think if somebody thinks that they're doing something that's beneath them.
The uncool stuff.
Yeah. I can't comprehend someone that like, that doesn't, that that thinks anything that is passed down to them is not worthy of their time. I struggle with that a lot. I hear a lot of people, a lot of people that do this talk too much. They don't consider why somebody needs them to do a role. Like if you're employed by somebody, the reason that you're employed is because they need you to do a task so that they can continue to make more money, so they can pay you more money every year. But if you constantly do things that irritate clients, or you don't double check the calendars and people get on the wrong flights, or like you don't connect an interview, well, guess what? That manager then has to talk to the client about a situation that did not get handled by somebody that they're paying money to. And so they're not going to really want to hear when you're ready for a pay increase or a percentage of commission because you didn't do the job you needed to do. So I think when people don't have a more nuanced understanding of what their role in the position is, they can't understand how to move forward. And that seems to be sometimes those people only focus about how they're moving forward and how it benefits them, not how it benefits the organization. Bands don't grow, the company doesn't grow. Company doesn't grow, you're not going to make more money. More clients are going to come in that you can sign and earn income off of. So it all works in fruition. I think people get too caught up in the small minor details that are solely focused on them. And to do this job well, you have to consider everyone else before you even think about yourself. And that's a challenging thing for most people to do to work in entertainment. Because in a lot of ways, like the entertainment industry becomes a bottom feeding industry. It's people that want to be taking selfies with artists or being on stage and taking big pictures so their friends validate them. As a manager, you can't worry about your own validation. You have to worry about your clients being validated, not you. And if you do your job well enough, you can look at your bank account and say, I feel pretty validated right now. I can pay my bills. I can pay my mortgage. I can support my family. And guess what? Like when these tours are over with, I can take a vacation and I can do stuff that matters to me. But if it's all about you all the time, then there's no room for it to be about anybody else. And your job is to make your entire career about other people.
Oh, that makes sense. I mean, as you were saying it, I was trying to think of like situations. I've obviously made mistakes too, and maybe been on the delivering end of this before. I feel like we all have in some way, mm-hmm. shape or form, but more recently I've been on the receiving end of this and identifying it in other people's systems and just being like, oh, it's really hard to do your job and do somebody else's job. So when you mm-hmm. experience it, you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And totally. You don't want to work with those people. That's how it makes you just don't want to. Yeah.
But sometimes that helps you. Like I remember there's been clients throughout my career that, that like, I go, man, like this is bad. And I would take it personally, like, why can't I help this person? Why can't I like move their career forward? And it's like, you realize there's some people that don't want that help from you and that you may need to step aside in order for them to find the thing that fits for them. That's what, you know, when you talked about the journey aspect of everything, like that's what I feel my job is. Sometimes I sign clients or I work with employees at a certain stage of their career. Sometimes that's a place where they're selling out arenas or they're a young manager that's got a couple of hot things that are actually getting deals and making money. And sometimes it's like teaching them how to do it. And sometimes it's that place where they're in their low point and you are the only thing that keeps it somewhat grounded, but you can't help them get past that. It doesn't mean I have to dislike any person that I stop working with. It doesn't mean that I have to have any kind of bad feelings towards that. It's just, you have to have a general empathy for the human understanding of work and realize like we're all in chapters. This person might be at a better chapter in my life or a worse chapter in my life. I might be at a better chapter of their life or a worse chapter of life. Or we might both be in a situation where we're learning from each other about what we do and do not want. Yeah. And like, if you can do that, it removes all of the selfishness and ego that can come from both sides and allows you just to recognize this is the job today.
I mean, you've been doing it for 20 years now, but how long would you say that you struggled with this kind of thing for a while? Or was it immediately apparent to you? Or like, what was...
My entire 20s was just a complete, it should be a school study on how to do things right and wrong. I think like I, and that's why I think I empathize with young professionals doing this a lot is because I realize like how much of this becomes personal. And when you're fighting for a band and trying to get them a good deal and the record label does something to screw something up, or you get them on a big tour and somebody makes a lapse in judgment that gets them kicked off the tour, you realize that like, man, they affected everything. In my early, like I was full of piss and vinegar in my 20s. And like I've never heard that saying before.
Yeah. Definitely from the South. All right, let's go.
Yeah. I was ready to jump into a fight with everybody when I was in my early 20s. As I learned from other people, like as I worked at different companies and I had different people that both coached me and mentored me and showed me how to do it at a different level, I realized like, okay, the battle here is a lesson I learned from somebody else. And I'm basically mimicking them and not being myself. Do I want to be argumentative? No, I don't. I just want things to be done well, and I want to protect my clients. Well, there's probably a better way for me to do that. So every year I've done this, I think I've done a better way. And I've also done a lot of things that I go, oh, why did I do that this year? You know, and like, I think that's something you have to kind of be cognizant of is like, I'm certainly not perfect. I certainly make plenty of mistakes every day, but I hope I do it with the right intentions. And if you intend to do things the right way, usually you find your way out of those mistakes.
All right. I'm absorbing stuff sometimes. You say like the density of quality of things you say is quite high. So as you say it effortlessly, I'm also at the same time like, okay, I got that. And then there's like another good one. I'm like, oh man, that's good too. I like it. Okay. So something I wanted to ask you about was just something that comes up in my career, and I'm sure it'll come up with other people, maybe in touring or not. But I'm sure you've experienced it, is where you work with somebody like we were talking about, and they might do something wrong, but you're not necessarily like, I don't have a specific example, but your relationship with them isn't, you know, I'm not their mentor. They're not my mentee. You're working across from them, right? They're just somebody you work with. Do you ever struggle with not being like, you almost just have to let them be wrong to some extent, right? It's, you can't correct somebody you're working with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think, okay, you know, you're trying to, your job's not to be the police, you know, yeah. Like, and if like my opinions and thoughts are different than somebody else, and we all are doing this because we have different skill sets. I think there are moments when you need to speak up. I think there's moments where people get habitually lazy and complacent and do things, they learn bad habits. And I don't have much of a filter on myself when I see somebody that's intentionally doing something for the wrong reasons. Not that they like don't know that it's wrong or like they're making,
yeah,
when they're maliciously doing something of like, I'm just not going to do this because nobody cares, or I have a hard time with that. And so like, mm-hmm, I usually am the first person that reaches, like if I go to a show and I see something's like screwed up or I see somebody's not working as hard, like I usually am straight in that person's face and being like, what's the thought process of this? Why are we, yeah, not doing this versus this? And, but like that gives them a chance to explain to me what's going on. And it could be like, well, the reason we're doing this is the band's not sound checking. Why isn't the band sound checking? Well, the tour manager is off doing something else. He's not, why is the tour manager not doing, like, you learn a lot of things about how people like pass blame and, yeah, then also how to rectify what's real and what's like some BS on the road. And I think like, for me, like that's allowed me to have, I feel, good relationships with my crew. So that if I know like, man, the band's like really discouraged on tour, then it's not just them being surrounded by a bunch of people complaining, which is 90% of what the road becomes. And you can't get out of that funk. So my job when I go to these shows, it's less about watching the show. It's watching everybody else.
You're like consulting.
Yeah. Like I go to these shows and before I get there, I prep everything that I think any question anybody's going to ask me. I'm sitting on a plane for 2 hours. I am thinking about any problem that's going to happen. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And I'm writing down notes and being like, okay, this could happen. Then I get there and none of that stuff happens. And I go into all the stuff that I did not foresee happening. And I talk one-to-one to every single person on our crew, find out everything that's going on. I figure out how I can make their job easier, how I can help them. And then I go talk to the client, the band, and I hear the things that are going on. And then I piece together why this thing is not working or what's broken here. And then like, by the time I leave that show, I need to have encouraged everybody to work harder and together in a better way. And if I can't do that, people have to go because that's not going to make for an efficient ship. But if somebody's just having struggles with something or not doing something right or are missing the bigger picture, if I'm not the one that's going to communicate that to them, that's what I'm hired for. I'm, yeah, hired to be a CEO of a band's business so, yeah, that the band themselves can be more creative and create better art without having to like reprimand somebody or talk to them about pay increases or like make sure their flight's correct. So if I'm not doing that, who is? And if nobody's doing it, who's running this thing? And, yeah, if nobody's running this thing, what's it going to become? So it's a big responsibility to both like help people. Like if I just criticized everybody for what they did, I would not ever work with anybody that becomes better. There's plenty of people that are on the road. Like if my guitar tech tells me something's wrong with like the Kemper amps, you better believe I'm going to take everything he says as faithful gospel in that way.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to lie to me because he's worked with me for 7 years and, yeah, he knows what he does is going to make the band show better. It's going to make the crowd enjoy the show more and it's going to make the band less frustrated. But if I went and said like, this seems like a costly endeavor, are you just wasting our money? Then my ego is getting in the way and I'm, yeah, not doing the best job to make the entire business better. So like, I think you have to speak up to things, but I think you also have to listen and see what the underlying problem is and take yourself out of it, take your feelings out of it and say, how do I best serve this person today? Whoever that person is, how do I serve them so they can then in turn serve the client and serve the situation better?
Okay. And my last question was, you know, how as a person that makes mistake myself, can I come off as somebody that can be corrected? And I think the last thing you kind of said, you know, talks to that is just be available to hear the things that people are saying and not put your ego in front of it.
And say, hey, I messed up. Hey, yeah, I screwed up. Hey, I did this wrong and I want to do this right. I, yeah, think more often than not, people want to do that. People are in positions like we all do, where we're working with musicians and trying to make the overall aesthetic and the show better. You're usually around good-hearted people because otherwise they do something else. They do, yeah, something that makes them far more money, that's way easier, way cushier. They're in this because they have some sort of a passion. Whether they've lost that at times or not, the passion is still there in some way. You have to talk to people and teach them as a human being So yeah. They in turn give you respect and talk to you as a human being as well. And if you do that, every good organization I've ever seen do this has operated from that kind of mentality that like everybody here is an expert. So how are we best utilizing our experts? And when you start thinking like somebody's dead weight, well, then they shouldn't be a part of your team. They should go on and do something different and better with their career. And you should find better people to work in those positions. Because otherwise, that's just like harboring resentment. It's terrible.
Yeah, you're almost doing a disservice to the person that you're not being honest to by not letting them go. Like, oh, we'll keep you here, but it's not a good fit. Like, you have to be honest with people.
100%.
Okay, cool. I mean, we've been talking we've been talking mostly about your manager facing aspect of your career, but I was very impressed, actually. I know last time we saw each other, you were going down the road of starting a festival. You started Sad yeah. Summer Festival, and I know it's not just you, and you can tell me more about that in a sec, but it's crazy to me because you, as a human being, you have a lot on your plate. And if you want to do something else, you either have to get a bigger plate or take something off your plate. And mm-hmm. I was wondering, how did you go from saying, all right, I'm a manager, I got a few artists, I'm doing my thing, let's start a festival. Like, how did that happen internally?
I think initially the conversation came up right before the last Warped Tour. My two partners, Tim Kirch and Mike Markey, we all have known each other and worked together in various ways for decades. And, we knew there was going to be a void with Warped Tour going away. And we knew nobody was going to come in and kind of like try to replicate that yeah. process, nor should they. Warped Tour did a great thing. And I think it served its time, and new ideas need to come in and new ways for this genre to evolve need to come in. And, that entire summer, we were talking to bands and agents and managers of like, we're thinking of doing something. If we do it, would you want to do it? And some people were like, absolutely. And some people were skeptical, which they should have been. Yeah. It was three guys that had not produced a festival before trying to produce a festival.
We'll believe it when we see it.
Yeah. And I think when I talked to Andrew, like we had just completed the first year, which was a roller coaster of emotions. And it was one of the best things I think I had ever been a part of. And also at the same time, one of the most overwhelmingly stressful and self-doubting scenarios I'd ever been in my life. And we accomplished something with very little means. The first year, no sponsors, very little resources, shoestring budget. All of us, were on the, if it had gone belly up, we'd have all probably gone bankrupt.
Yeah. A lot of money in personally invested.
So when I think about like, what were the struggles and how did you like balance your time? It's almost funny. Like that first year, I didn't take anything off my plate. I just said like, business, like
move on over.
But like, that was what it was. Like my business was, I think I had this old school mentality of like, this is how you run a business and this is how you regain. And I was wrong. And it was like a very interesting thing. Like that first year, I got so burnt out during the festival that I had to neglect time with certain clients and my employees. And it's like, it shifted the culture. And it took like, we finished that and I was like, okay, I have a better idea how to do this. And then pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And like, it gave me the time. Like there was so much noise when you're running a big management company, you're producing a festival that's competing with like other bigger festivals and you're responsible for different things. Like a manager versus a promoter, two different roles. Yeah. And the way somebody will talk to a manager versus the way they'll talk to a promoter, completely different. And and like learning how to balance like those feelings around that is tough in itself. And producing a festival where you have to make sure artists are on stage, that your crew's working well, that you're working with different stage setups, just like the entire infrastructure was a challenge. But learning from that first year and be like, okay, we can do this. This is fine. Like we can continue to build this. And then going into the next year where we finally got a corporate sponsor in Journeys to be the presenter of the festival. We got a bigger band like All Time Low at that point to headline the festival. Like we had a much bigger lineup, a much bigger talent budget, and we were playing fewer dates. And like, how do we make all this stuff work? And then boom, pandemic hits and it shut down for a year. And so we rolled everything to the next year and we were lucky. All Time Low became a significantly bigger band during the pandemic than they were before the band. And we came out of it and almost there was this, we were one of the first summer tours that went out post pandemic. And we had to consider everything from COVID protocols to general health stuff, but also like, how do you deal when you go to Anaheim and New York with backstage guests? Oh, you don't have any. That's yeah. how. And then how do you deal with like the 200 music industry people that have been used to being catered to being told, no, you can't come backstage to see your artist today. We're trying to make sure this tour continues to go on.
Yeah, I didn't even ask. I was like, no, I'm not even trying. Let's just run the show back. Let's get the music out there for fans. I was like, all right, that's fair.
But like, I remember going into that second year and the pandemic shook us all. Like I had almost 18 months where work was not the focus of my life because there was not work to be had. And coming back to it was like, oh man, are we going to be rusty? Like, are we going to know what we're doing? Man, this thing is a much bigger thing. And like, it was almost like getting back out there was a reminder of what we do. In that year prior, during the pandemic, I had had one of my most profitable years after year one of the festival. We didn't make hardly any money off the festival, but my management business was growing, and this was going to be my linchpin to everything as well. I was in a position to where I could have set up and done things the way I wanted to. And instead, what I found out through that was like, I haven't been paying attention to what's going on around here. I'm not happy with my staffing situation. I don't feel supported enough. I don't really want to have this office space on Music Row where no one comes to Music Row to meet with the punk rock manager. Why am I wasting all this money on infrastructure when I could be putting it back into hiring experts to like developing new streamlines of business? And so the pandemic allowed me to like really focus on what I needed to do and what I needed to shed. And through that, like I recognized my staff needed to go elsewhere. It was time for them to learn a new situation. Both very talented people. They were no longer fits for what the business was growing into. They went on and I helped them get other jobs in places that are better suited to their skill sets. I found people that were better suited to what I needed for both support for the festival, but also to run the type of management business I wanted to be instead of being a shell of what I thought the management business should be. I eliminated clients that just did nothing but complain. And I replaced them with clients that actually earned.
We need names.
And we're moving forward. I can't give you names, but they know who they are.
Kidding.
But like ultimately, like doing that allowed me to like regain my joy. And so when I had went through a year and a half of like, I don't know if we're going to do this. And like I told the new person that came to work for me, I was like, I just blew everything up. Everything that I had that was like normal, I threw it in the trash and I said, I want to try something different. And doing that gave me so much more freedom to be creative. It got me back in touch with the manager that I was instead of the manager I'd become. Yeah. And like, it was exciting. And I think because of that, like we'd go into like, we had a huge year with All Time Low. We were like the top 9 summer tour of the year last year.
Congratulations.
Like that was a cool thing to see like 3 guys that had never put on a festival doing something that got so much attention to rebuilding it and kind of bringing newer artists in like Water Parks and Neck Deep and Hot Mulligan and like just really having a cool like undercard of bands that are just going to do something really cool. In the meantime, bringing in new management clients and also like thinking of new ways I could focus on stuff for Mayday and my producer Chad Copeland that we hadn't done before and creating new streamlines of business for them. It got me like fired up again. And I got surrounded by like a great social media team, a great merch partner, a great executive assistant who's helped me with everything. And like, it made me like ready to sign stuff. It made me ready to bring more stuff in. So it took all of that to say, I got to shed some stuff in order to make time. But once I have the time, I can do the stuff that I'm better at and I can fill it with stuff that's going to be more beneficial for everything we have.
You had some consulting to do on yourself, basically. It sounds like you did what you do at the venue for your bands and your, you know, the crew members, but you did it for yourself and you looked at all the pieces that made everything. In a way, I mean, I obviously say it. You know what I mean when I say the pandemic had positive aspects. We can all agree that it was negative on so many levels, but I like when I can hear about everybody's kind of way they found it affected them in a net positive way, whether it be personally or being more introspective or kind of, you know, consulting your whole life and finding your way through it. So
it was the best thing that ever happened to me. The pandemic reset my entire life. And everything in my life now is incredibly positive.
That's great. Well, well done. And I'm happy to hear that. And I can feel it. I feel it through your words, you know, as you're saying it, I'm like, oh, I look forward. Not that I'm in a place that I don't like, but I know what it feels like to kind of get a refresh and be like, all right, this is sick. You know, I find it every time I find a new thing that really clicks. And I'm happy that the festival is kind of doing that for you. And you're what? So you've done 2 years now. You guys have another one coming up soon or?
We have the third year starts July 8th. It's a 18. We added a couple markets, so it's 18 cities this year.
Okay.
Water Parks, Neck Deep, Mayday Parade, State Champs, Hot Mulligan, Against the Current, Somerset, Magnolia Park, Lolo. It's a pretty good lineup in that way.
That's great. I mean, stacked. It's like, you know, I would say it's like, give me the Hurley stage, just the blow up stage from Warped Tour, if that makes sense. Just the like just the bands who aren't like been around forever, but are, well, some of these have been around for a while, but you know, the ones that are all popping, the ones I love to see. And that's, I was wondering actually, so the cool thing about a festival is like, it's a little bit, a lot bigger than a show, right? There's more aspects to it. You have vendors or you have food options. You have, you know, it's like a bigger production. So as this festival travels, we have a lot of people who listen who are looking for their entry points to this industry. Is there anything you guys hire on a local level that's not through like a security team, or are you guys all like, I don't know, is there any entry points you guys offer at all?
Yeah, there we usually do. We'll have like a local merch assistant in each city that gets hired out. There's a lot of volunteers for the nonprofit stuff. It's kind of a gateway into a lot of things. But yet also the venues like staff light, like that's what we learned a lot last year during the pandemic, like getting stagehands was incredibly tough. So if you're like a young musician that wants to work at a venue or wants to go on tour as like a tech, now's the best time in the world to become like a venue stage tech, you know, because like you're going to go in these shows and there's not going to be as many of you as there were before. So people are going to notice the ones that work hard and you're going to get road gigs after that. So like we're still a small, like it's a small system. It's three of us that run it, but we also have like a staff of four that oversees like the internal operations of it. And then we have a road team of about 11 that does all the particulars and stuff. But yeah, we depend on each local market to have help. And this year, especially, we're going to do that with more sponsors and more bands and like a bigger footprint over, like we're going to need additional help. So there'll be positions we hire for, there'll be voluntary positions, and there'll be positions that'll be filled through the venues and stuff that we're at.
Well, great. Well, I guess then for people who are listening to take action, if you want to do this, reach out to local venues, the nonprofits, and then is there any emails that they should look for that they should send to, or is that the best advice?
Yeah. I mean, if you go to sadsummerfest.com, we have an FAQ site that like allows you to have access to like reach out if you want to do volunteer opportunities and stuff. Someone will get back in touch with you on that. But like, I think like as we've done our whole careers and stuff, we're always looking for new people that have fresh ideas of how to help and encourage the festival. And it becomes a fluid thing where we get to bring new, exciting people into our operation year after year. I like that.
Well, perfect. Yeah. And we'll put that link in the caption so you guys can check it out with a little bit easier of a click, because we're always looking for ways to get people involved in the industry. You know, I think the hardest part for people who, you know, aren't in school or don't have like a local community is just finding that starting point. And then if they can follow all the things you said to do about how to operate and how to, you know, be hungry and work to grow and learn, I think they'll do just fine. It's just getting in there, man.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. The entry part is the hardest part. But if you're talented and you work hard and you have a good, like just a good attitude, doors open for you. And I think that was the thing that like was impressed on me at a young age, is like you see a lot of people and you see the things they do well and they don't do well. And your job is to kind of be a sponge and learn from each of these people, learn their benefits, learn their detriments, and take those and apply them to your own life. And hopefully you're in a position to where you can help somebody else out one day that was in the same spot you were in when you were trying to figure it out. And that's what I hope I am able to be able to do in my career, because it's the same thing I get back from all these kids that remind me why I do this every day.
And for what it's worth, guys, we're using kids as a term of just young people in the industry. It's totally. We're not working with 11-year-olds, but
we're not. You
know, it's funny because it's such a normal term to us, because we've talked about it on the podcast before, but people at a concert are usually referred to as kids, no matter the age. It's just a general term. Totally. I mean, I think it's nice because that's how I feel when I'm at a concert. I feel like a kid, so it makes sense to me.
Me too. It's funny. I told my girlfriend the other week that I was in a show in Athens last fall, and felt like a kid because I was running up the steps to see the show at different angles to get the perspective of every audience member. And I was like, that stuff's fun to me. And that I think like anytime there's youthful exuberance of being at a show. And so it's definitely not meant as a knock on anything. I think
kids
have paid my bills for 20 years. And so I have a lot of respect for anybody that shows up in the audience to support a client we're working with.
Hell yeah. Well, cool. I mean, that pretty much brings us to the close of the episode. Thank you so much, Josh, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Before we go, when you toured, shower shoes, no shower shoes, what's the vibe?
When I toured, probably no shower shoes. Now I wouldn't get in one without like probably like a full on like boots on or something. Matt. Yeah.
Oh, man. I did ask, like, I was talking to Falcone before he hopped on. I was like, give me a question I should ask him that, like, I wouldn't know about. Like, dude, ask him about his cousins and what he does at events with his cousins. He's like, makes them flip tires. What's going on there? I just got to know. Like, what do you do with your cousins?
When I go home for Thanksgiving, I have a cousin, my cousin Taylor, who's just like, he's a big boy, and like he has the confidence of a man that should not have the confidence he has. And so like we my brother is like used to be a personal trainer, and okay. he has an entire setup in the backyard, and so we make my cousin flip tires and like do all kinds of ridiculous stuff, and we put it on the internet, and it's really funny. So it's kind of a good way to kind of go back home and be around my family and just have some laughs and stuff around family get-togethers. So
that's great. All right. Well, thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you in real life. I will check out Stad Summerfest and see what non-industry date I can make it to. I'll never ask for a guest list to Anaheim, man. It's just, I feel, you know, they're just always big, and Sacramento's not too far away. So figure it out.
Come to whichever one you want. We'll take care of you. So, yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Cool. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Yeah.